I ran the New York City Marathon last year, and like a week before the marathon, I got this horrible hip pain, like horrible hip pain out of nowhere. It was not on a run, it just showed up. And so my therapist was like, come right now. So I went, and basically, I don't know the name for this. I don't think it's Reiki. I'm not sure what it is, but we talked to my hip. We talked to my hip. We named it. We, said it. I identified it. It was a sumo wrestler like sitting on my hip, and we moved it. And we moved it throughout my body, and I had no pain on marathon day.
Interesting.
And it was just like, how do you talk to, yeah, it was fascinating. And before this, I was so like, eh, it was a little woo-woo. But
Yeah.
it worked. And I was like, that's amazing to be able to kind of like talk to your pain in that way. Yeah, I've learned so much from them. I'm really grateful.
Welcome back to End the Villain. So today we're going to be talking with Jesse, who I met while I was at South by Southwest. And Jesse works at a place called Experience Camps, which is a grief camp for kids. And we're just going to be talking about like basically griefy shit today. And so with that, do you want to just give the listeners a brief intro to who you are, whatever you think they should know about you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks to you both for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm Jesse Moss. I'm the senior marketing manager at Experience Camps. Like Isabel said, we put on free 1 week camps for kids who've experienced the death of a parent, sibling, or primary caregiver. We also offer other year-round programs, and everything is completely free for our kids. And so the work that I do is basically telling people what we do and also trying to change the culture and the way we talk about grief and show up for one another.
Awesome. So do you want to just talk a little about how you got into doing that?
Yeah, I'm happy to. It was actually sort of a happy accident. I was walking on the streets of New York City with one of my best friends, and we were having that classic conversation that I'm sure so many people have had, where it's like, you're frustrated with your job. What could you do every day of your life and wake up and feel good about it? And does that job exist, or is that just something somebody made up one day and capitalism? And she was telling me about experience camps and how she thought it could be up my alley. My brother died in 2012 by suicide, and I also had gone to sleepaway camp as a kid for 10 years and loved, loved, loved it. Had a great experience. I basically grew up there, taught me so much about being human and interacting with others. And she was like, you should check out their website and see if they have any job openings. And I did, and they didn't. And I was frustrated, and but I did see the volunteer button. And basically what that was a camp counselor position at one of the camps. And I applied like that day. I applied and got it and went in 2018 as a camp counselor at our California program. Had the best week ever, had a bunk of 15-year-olds. And I went in. When I found out that I had 15-year-olds, I was terrified because I remember being 15, and that's an awful age. But what we know about grief is that no matter what age you've experienced it, there are connecting lines between all of us. And so what I learned from those 15-year-olds that week, like, seriously changed my life. And on the plane ride home from that week, I wrote my cover letter because this is the world and the universe for you. But like 3 days before I went to experience camps as a counselor, they posted a job.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, they don't know, but that's my job.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, let me just see if the week is as amazing as everyone says it is. And it was. And so the plane ride home, I wrote my cover letter, sent it off, and was hired a couple months later.
So, were you a camp kid yourself when you were a kid?
Yes. So I went to Camp Wakanda in upstate New York for 10 years, 7.5 weeks every year. I went with my brother. So it was also one of those things that bonded us as well, because the cool thing about camp is like you learn about independence. And you get to be without the people who you're with in your house, whether it's parents or caregivers or whoever it is, for, the other 10 months of the year. So my brother and I, like, we became so close during those 7 weeks because we had each other and we sort of had the secret, right? Like, we know our lives and nobody else does. And so there was something really bonding about that. So finding experience camps was also like, not only did I love camp as a kid, but it was something my brother and I did together. So I got to honor him in that way too.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. A lot like Wakanda.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sure you know that.
You know, I've heard that before. I've heard that before.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to camp when I started from when I was like 10 years old. And it was only like 2 weeks, but it was like a very weird. I don't think it would not be. I did not think it would be like politically correct today. It was a camp where you like where you go and like you had to bring an Indian dress and you had like, you know, whatever, like beads for your achievements and stuff like that. It was called Singing Great. Eagle Lodge.
Yeah, you know what? Camp is very rooted in cultural appropriation.
Yeah,
and totally. It's horrifying. And I put the call out there to all the camps that still have things remaining mm-hmm. like that to rid yourself and do the work. But yeah, it's very rooted in indigenous culture.
Totally. You didn't go to camp, did you, DeAndre?
No, I was way too poor.
Okay. Fair enough. Camp is expensive.
The closest thing I had to camp was Governor's School, which happened in my the summer of my junior year, and it was like a kind of like a smart person 6-week program in North Carolina. And it was very, very life changing. Very like very, very positive experience. And similarly, like, you know, without adults, like had like structured days. Hanging out with other, you know, other peers of a similar age. Yeah. Very like.
But you weren't like singing every day.
We weren't singing. I was actually in an a cappella group in Governor School. So I was singing every day.
Cool.
But it wasn't standard programming.
Gotcha. So, I mean, I would love to hear a little bit about your brother. If you could, you know, just tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my brother and I were 3 years apart, so we were sort of like classic siblings where we, you know, we're going through a lot of the similar things at the same time, but like slightly far apart. So, you know, he was a freshman in high school and I was a senior. So like we were experiencing a lot of the same things as kids, just like due to our age, but also like the things that were going on in our household growing up. My mom was an addict when we were growing up, so we sort of like went through that together. And then my brother, he was super goofy, loved music, really, really cool guy. Like I always say, I would still be friends with him today, mm-hmm. like, which I can't say about everybody that like was in my life in the past. He became an addict when I was in college. And so spent like, you know, 2 or 3 years going down that like classic addict journey, which of rehabs and psych wards and jail and all of the things people who have dealt with an addict in their life know about. And so, yeah, we spent a long time sort of watching him go down that path, which was really hard on all ends for everybody. And then, yeah, in 2012, he was actually at an ashram trying to sort of try something new, but ended up dying by suicide in June of 2012.
Mm. What's his name?
His name is Jordan.
My brother's name is Jordan.
Wow.
No way. I love when
I didn't
that
even
happens.
Know that.
I love when that happens.
Yeah.
I take it as a sign from the universe, whatever that means.
Yeah. Do you, okay, so this is something that like I don't know if there's an actual answer to it, but like do you think that when there are people like I feel like especially in like the grief space and end of life space right now, like there's always like there's these people, especially like, you know, on Instagram you see all these posts that are like, oh, don't say this, like say this other thing, and like, you know, whatever, like I guess my question is at camp, right, or you know, to just try to help people deal with all this shit, right? Is there like truly, I mean, outside of basically like listening, do you feel like there's really things that you can quote unquote do to like help people?
Yeah, I think we as a society have been kind of like given these phrases that we're supposed to say,
yeah.
Whether it's thoughts and prayers that politicians say after a shooting, or I'm sorry for your loss after someone in your life dies. There are just sort of these like phrases that make people feel like, you know, I've done it. I've said the thing and I've checked the, you know, box and now I'm good. Mm-hmm. And I think the work that we're trying to do is to show people that there is really more than that you can do. And even if it's a small thing. So I think The answer to your question is yes. There are things you can do and things that you can say that are better than others. Do I think there is one perfect phrase that will, you know, give you the trophy of winning, you know, grief support? No. I like to tell people that the most honest thing I've ever said to somebody else who's grieving is, I don't know what to say right now.
Yeah.
This fucking sucks. I don't know what to say, but I'm going to sit here with you and be in it. Right. Like nobody has the perfect words, right? But there are things you can do and like small shifts that you can make. You know, after my mom died in 2021, I got a lot of texts that said, let me know if there's anything I can do for you. And every time I got that text, I just sort of rolled my eyes because what am I going to tell you to do? Like random person from high school, like random person I haven't spoken to in 10 years. Like, hey, you mind going to pick me up a coffee? Like, I'm never going to do that. Right. So to like shift it slightly and say, hey, I'm going to do this thing for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not exactly what you need or want in the moment. And if it's not, let me know. Right. Like I had a couple of people who just Venmo'd me $5 and said, coffee and a donut or something like that, you know, or said, hey, I'm going to show up at your house to like give you a hug at this time. If that doesn't feel good for you, just let me know. But I'll be there if I don't hear from you or something like that. Small, tiny, like little shifts in the things we say and the ways we communicate that we want to show up for people, I think is possible. There's no magic words, but yeah, I think it's really important to like find the language, whether, and it doesn't matter if the language is, I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've had a couple of episodes recently about like grief or grief adjacent stuff. And like, that's like one of the most salient findings across, you know, like I recently had like a big tragedy happen with my brother, Jordan. He's still alive, but had a really like big medical crisis that occupied like, you know, my life for the greater part of like 2 months.
Oh, no.
And yeah, like let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Largely useless, but on the flip side, like the people that did things without prompting, without asking me, or like say, or even people that were like, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing, and like, would that be useful for you? That stuff was just like, it like was so incredibly helpful, like mentally, spiritually, and many ways, some, you know, in some aspects monetarily, people sent me money to you know, stay in places or like pay for Airbnbs and stuff. And that was just like, like not only did it help, like literally help my situation, but I was like, I felt so incredibly supported just within myself that like it was strengthening in that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's beautiful to hear. And that's how it should be, you know, like, if this doesn't work for you, that's okay. But here's what I'm thinking about doing. That's huge versus like, let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Bye. You know, like, that's so empty.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't provide much. Then like, I think it makes people feel like they've checked the box. Yeah.
I get the fear of like, not wanting to overstep or like, you know, not knowing, like, I mean, because like, it truly is like, exactly what you were saying, like, that fucking sucks. I don't really know what to say, right? Like, that is really, really like just the reality of it. But I think that it's just so much better to just acknowledge that, right? Like, you can say 100%. To the person, like, I don't really, you know, this is really hard. There's nothing I can say to make this better for you, but like, you know, would love to like do one of these 8 things for you if that's useful.
Exactly. And like, people need to know that they're not going to fix it, right? Like, I think as a culture, we're so fix it focused, right? Whether it's like, you know, self-care, you got to change your mind, you know, all these things have really like shown us that we're supposed to like fix a part of us. And I think what we're trying to say here is like, there's no fixing this horrible thing that's happened, this tough thing that we're going through, but just showing that you understand and that there's support there and there's nurturing and all those types of things. And you know, a lot of people will say to me, like, I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to make you sad. Yeah. And it's like, well, I'm already sad. Like, you're not going to make me more sad by like bringing up my brother, bringing up my mom, talking about grief. If anything, like, you're one in a million because most people are turning their backs on it. So the fact that you're even turning towards it, that's huge. Yeah. For sure.
Was it like a major surprise to your family when was your brother like leaving notes or like, you know, like in any way sort of like asking for help, or was it like a total surprise?
It's really tough because, first of all, I say all the time, I think I have long COVID and my memory is shit.
Yeah.
But because this was over a decade ago now, yeah. But there were definitely, looking back, like tiny little moments. I think, you know, I always say if I had the brain I had now, I wonder if he would still be alive, because when I was, you know, 20, 21, 22, like I didn't have the words to understand or to support or say the right things. There were tiny little moments that I think, you know, like Facebook statuses. This was like back in the day when we all like dumped a bunch of pictures on Facebook and, you know, wrote like, just got to my friend's house or whatever, you know, too much detail on Facebook. But there were like little like quotes about, you know, being depressed and upset and things like that. But I think also with an addict, it's just such a difficult journey. That it's, you know, we do all the things we can, right? When we think someone's struggling, and at the end of the day, like, at least this is what my therapist tells me to think, is like, it's not on us, you know, it's the person had this thing in their head and this was going to be what it was going to be. And we do everything we can to show up and, you know, kind of thinking through all of the, what could I have done? It only leads to like your own pain.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I do have like friends who are in a similar situations to like where they have a younger brother and they're like, yeah, like, one of my friends' younger brothers was just institutionalized because they found a suicide note and they caught him before. But then it was sort of like, like it is really difficult to figure out in those situations. Like you feel so helpless. It's like, how do you even approach trying to figure out what would be helpful?
Yeah, it's really tough. It's really, really tough. And I've had friends, you know, go through similar things and reach out for advice. And similarly, what we were just talking about, sometimes I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Totally.
I don't know. Like, I tried a million different ways and it didn't work. And I think, you know, I'm not necessarily like a success story. I do have experience with it. But yeah, there was no like notes or anything. Right. It was just, I think the like journey that he went through over the couple of years with addiction and sober home, jail, rehab, psych ward, he would, you know, do little things to try and get out of one of them, right? Like he would, you know, threaten suicide to get out of the rehab, to be moved into the psych ward because he liked it better. Because at the psych ward, it was like arts and crafts and reading and more downtime. And it wasn't as, you know, your bed corner has to be perfectly like army pulled over, which like the rehab was making him do. Right. So it was like, it's just so hard. I wish I had the right answers you know, some big advice to give, but yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah.
And I think figuring out what is the right like space, like how to have boundaries in those types of situations too, because like, you know, I have an other friend whose best friend is also very suicidal, and it's like kind of a crisis that happens like very regularly, where like you know, they're sucked into this like crisis situation, and it like feels like a constant thing. And then you're just like, okay, like I don't even know at what point does like it make sense to like, because you also care about their autonomy, right? And like institutionalizing someone feels like a really shitty thing to do to one of your best friends.
For sure.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say I was burnt out, you know, towards the end with Jordan. Like, it was just constant. One day, next phone call, oh, he's here now, he's there now. Oh, he did this, he did. It's really tough on the people supporting the person. It's a lot. And you also like empathize and want to do everything you can. And then, you know, this person over here is saying, no, they have to hit rock bottom. And this person's here is like, no, support them with everything you can and show up to every single thing. And this person's like autonomy. And this person,
right.
It's constant, you know?
And truly, like there is not really a right way.
Right.
Yeah. I believe that as well.
Okay, so do you think that like the therapy that you have been through has like meaningfully helped you compared to whatever the alternate universe where you did not seek therapy for it?
100% So when my brother died, I was in therapy for like a year. But again, I was like in my early 20s and didn't have good language and really sort of just like would talk about my week, you know, which a lot of like therapy is like, but it's just not the kind of therapy I'm into anymore. But back then I was like, okay. And then I went to work and then that was hard and okay, our time is up. Right. After my mom died, it was really different. It was a really different experience with grief. First of all, I had all this language. I was a part of experience camps. I knew the ways to, you know, talk about grief, and I had the ways to like show up for myself in a way. I kept saying to people, which nobody take this for what it is, but I kept saying, I want to get grief right this time. Yeah. And there's no right way to grieve. Let me scream that really loud. But it felt like when I did it with Jordan that like, I sort of half-assed it. Like I really didn't talk about my grief with Jordan until I got to experience camp 6 years later. Yeah. So when my mom died, I was like on a mission to get it right. I ended up taking 2 months off of work. Like I really nurtured myself, and luckily I work at a grief organization. They were like super supportive and understood. But what I ended up doing is at a recommendation of a friend, I went to this thing called a grief residency. And so essentially I lived in a tiny house on the property of this death doula, who's also a therapist, and they're amazing. And worked one-on-one for like a week straight around my grief. And not just that like classic sitting and talking, like we did Reiki, we went on like forest baths, we did all these different things. Mm-hmm. And then I continued working with them once the residency was over, and we did a lot of inner child work, and we were really going deep, like deeper than I ever had. And like, I was hardly talking about my week. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about, you know, my experiences with my mom when I was 11 and the way it impacted my grief now. And it was just, it was totally different. And I think, you know, not that I got it right, but I always joke with my therapist that I want therapy, but they think it's funny. I don't know if it's so funny.
You know, and like, I mean, how could you have gotten grief right the, you know, the first time, right? You're so young, and like the infrastructure is just not there. Like not even close.
And that's why I love being with experience camps, because like, you know, a lot of our kids come to us and we're the only resource they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, it's free. So like anybody can be a part of it. And the resources out there for grief, especially for kids, is, whew, we got to work on that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really curious, especially because in the previous episode that we just recorded, we talked a lot about this book that I was reading called My Grandmother's Hands, which talks about like, basically like how trauma manifests itself in your body. And I'm really curious how much of like when you were doing that retreat, for example, how much of it was like talking intellectual work and how much of it was like body work? Like, what would you say is sort of like the breakdown was, and which of those do you think that one of them was like more or less helpful?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I read The Body Keeps the Score like twice.
Yeah.
So I am a huge fan of understanding the like psychosomatic stuff.
Yeah.
I would say it was like 60 body, 40 talking.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it was quiet. And that was tough.
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to that. And I love talking about grief. You know, like, and I love talking about feelings. Like, I was not used to that. I really wasn't. And yeah, it was definitely different for me. And I think it's allowed me moving forward to like tap into my body more when difficult things come up, like griefy or not griefy. Well, at the end of the day, it's probably all griefy if we're being honest with myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's allowed me to really like focus more on my body. When hard things come up, you know, it's funny. I walked out of that residency with like a long list of things to buy for myself because they had it at the residency. And one of them was this, and I'm not remembering the names. Maybe I'll look it up after and you can put in the notes or something. This machine that you lay down and you put your feet in and it just swings your feet.
Whoa.
It just swings your feet like left to right for like 10, 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden it stops and your body is like filled. It's the best feeling in the world. I highly recommend everyone get one.
Wow.
It is like, it sends like chills up your whole entire body. I have to find it and send you the link. And I started using that whenever I would get like, you know, heated or overwhelmed or really anxious or have a panic attack. Because before I had gone to the residency, so my mom died in May and I went to the residency in December. Mm-hmm. So from May to December, like I was not well. I was having panic attacks. I was like scared you know, at night that somebody was going to come in and kill me. Like, it was getting really bad. And so whenever those moments came up post residency, I just swung my little feet and it would like change things. And so I think that, you know, you're kind of spot on with the, like, the body stuff. It's real. We carry so much of it in our bodies. And if we can leave our heads and get into our bodies and notice where we're feeling things, right? Like, my therapist was asking me those questions, like, where do you feel this? Mm-hmm. I have like another incredible story I'll share is that I ran the New York City Marathon last year.
Yeah.
And like a week before the marathon, I got this horrible hip pain, like horrible hip pain out of nowhere. It was not on a run. It just showed up.
Yeah.
And so my therapist was like, come right now. So I went and basically, I don't know the name for this. I don't think it's Reiki. I'm not sure what it is, but we talked to my hip. We talked to my hip. We named it. We, you know, said it. I identified it. It was a sumo wrestler, like sitting on my hip, and we moved it. And we moved it throughout my body, and I had no pain on marathon day.
So interesting.
And it was just like, how do you talk? It was fascinating. And before this, I was so like, it was a little woo. It worked. Yeah. It worked. And I was like, that's amazing to be able to kind of like talk to your pain in that way. I've learned so much from them. I'm really grateful.
Man.
Wow.
Yeah. Body stuff is hard and it's weird, but it's like, but it's also not hard in that it's like, you know, I think like the biggest step is like just trying to be more aware of what's happening within yourself and like doing something, something to try to respond to it, you know? Like as simple as like taking a walk or like meditating or whatever it might be, you know, I was like always moving. Like I was like, you know, going on runs each day and I fucking hate running when all of my Jordan stuff was happening. Hate running, but,
same, actually.
But during that time, it was just like, this is what I need to do. Like I need to exert myself and it brought me, a ton of it.
Yeah. I mean, running saved me and I hate running too. I still hate running. I'm doing my like, what year is this? Third marathon this November. And the first one I did was like 4 months after my mom died. And my mom knew I was signed up for the marathon. So like, it was something we talked about for a really long time. And then she died and then my training started.
Wow.
And so like, that saved me. I would go on runs and then I would pretend to hold my phone to my ear and talk to my mom and be like, that run was so hard. I hated that. It was, you know, 4 miles back then when that was like, you know, a scary run. And yeah, it gave me purpose. It gave me peace. It gave me clarity. I like would clear my mind for an hour and like listen to my music and then tell my mom about it and go home. I have this like funny like picture on my phone. I travel for experience camps and I go to the camps in August and I had a training run when I was going to our Georgia program. So the day before I go to our Georgia program was the first time I was running a double digits run. So it was going to be my first time ever in my life running 10 miles. Mm-hmm. And so all I wanted to do was call my mom. So this is a grief joke and maybe too much for people. And I apologize in advance if it's too much, but I FaceTimed my partner and she turned the phone towards my mom's urn. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mom, I just ran to, and like, I basically just like told her all about my run, like looking right at her urn. And there was something about that I was like, that was weird. And also like, that was kind of nice in a way. And I took a screenshot and I'm like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people go to like, people go to people's graves and talk to their, you know, their headstones, right? Like, it's not that much different than that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Totally. Yeah, I have had clients in the past where, like, they see a lot of manifestations of people who have died, you know? Like, I had one, like, a client who would have, like, whenever they thought of their mom, they would see this mourning dove, like, literally appear somewhere in the world.
Whoa.
Right? Like, almost without fail. You know?
Wow. All right. I'll give you one good story. One more good story about weird shit with my mom. My first marathon, which was, you know, the few months after my mom died, I was at the starting line and I wear like a running belt that houses my phone and I have Bluetooth headphones. They're literally about to say go. Like it's like 11:59. My start time is at 12. I see my watch turns 12. I'm like, oh my God, it's about to happen. I can't believe I'm about to run 26, 22 miles. This is crazy, crazy, crazy. And then all of a sudden in my earbuds goes, calling mom. I'm not kidding. This is a real story.
Wow.
This is a real story. Okay. I have the receipt. Literally, as soon as it happened, afterwards, I screenshotted. I'm like, no one's going to believe me.
Yeah.
And I literally look around. I'm like, what? And it starts ringing. And my phone is in my pouch. Like, it's hands-free. I am not touching it.
Yeah.
It calls my mom. Calling mom. I whip out my phone. It's literally calling my mom. I hang up. I start crying.
Yeah.
And then the thing goes off. And I have to go run to 6.2 miles. And I was like, okay. Understood.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. That's spooky as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spooky as shit. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, with some of that stuff, but that I was like, okay. Spent 4 months talking to my mom about running, and then my phone calls her on my starting time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Lots of handle.
Do you, did you keep your mom's phone too?
So I did, but I didn't know her code.
Yeah.
And I try to take it to the store, and they're like, we can't hack into this phone. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I have it, but yeah. It's locked. And
how much of you is glad that you can't get into the phone?
Oof.
If any. Because I feel like I would be glad that I wouldn't be able to get into the phone.
I feel 50-50 about it. I want the pictures. Like, I just know my mom took a bunch of selfies of herself, yeah. Right? Like, I want the photos of her. I only have, like, I have a lot of photos from my childhood, but then I only have, like, 10 photos in the last couple of years on my phone. So, like, that I want. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not sure I want to look at the text or anything like that.
Sure.
I wouldn't be able to stop myself. Like if I did have that resource, I would definitely just go through all of it.
Oh, 100%. Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got into her email, like on her computer, and she loved the Home Shopping Network. So it was a lot of that.
A lot of HSN.
Yeah.
So can you talk us through more about like what you do for your job? Like, I know it involves these camps. Yeah. I know it, you know, like, but I'd love to hear like, yeah, kind of like what your ongoing responsibilities are. What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? Anything?
Mm-hmm. And I would also love to hear how much of what you do for the kids is somatic versus like intellectual.
Yeah,
as
well, that's a good question.
Know? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll hit both. So like I said, we put on free 1 week camps for kids who've experienced the death of a parent, sibling, or primary caregiver. So this upcoming summer, which is so close, I can't even believe this year's flying by, we're going to serve about 1200 kids across 12 programs, and bring in about 500 volunteers, which is going to be amazing. We just are opening our newest program right outside of DC, in Maryland, which we're really excited about, bringing a lot of folks from Baltimore and DC. And it's going to be really powerful and amazing. But also like once COVID had started, we really shifted to trying to meet kids where they are. The most recent statistic that came out is that 6 million kids will experience the death of a parent or sibling or primary caregiver by the time they're 18 in this country. So we're serving 1,200, which is an incredible number. And we started with 27 so in 2009, so it's grown a lot. But how do we reach those 6 million as well? The kids that won't come to camp either because it doesn't work for them, they don't want to leave home, they don't know about us, you know, all the different reasons they won't come. And so we created a program in Minecraft. So we have a server for grieving kids that's totally monitored and run by volunteers that, you know, are kind of excited to be in space and help the kids build this world. We run a program on Roblox that is actually for non-grieving kids, which is a scavenger hunt that is littered throughout with ways to support a grieving friend. So, you know, you're finding different items and then you run into a little avatar that's like, hey, did you know that like you're not going to make someone sad by asking them a story about the person that died in their life? All right, go find that beach ball, you know. So it's really like game forward, which is really cool. And then, you know, we've got a big TikTok account and really trying to reach kids there as well and show them they're not alone, because, you know, my job is marketing. And so on one hand, I'm working every day to tell people about what we do and the different programs that we run. But, you know, the other side of it is, and what we really have spoken about a lot on this so far is, not to sound rude or anything towards the world, but we suck at it. Mm-hmm. You know, we suck at supporting grieving people. We don't have the language. We're uncomfortable. We're scared. I mean, even as a grieving person, sometimes I'm like, I don't know what to say. And so how do we make that shift? How do we teach people it's not rocket science? Teach them the words to say, like, show them there are people out there and that unfortunately it's going to happen to 100% of us. So how do we go about starting to talk about it so that it's not taboo and that we're better prepared when it does happen to us. So I love my job. I feel really lucky. I always say, like, you know, it's a job that touches my heart and I get to honor my brother. I get to honor my mom. I get to be surrounded by people who've experienced what I've experienced and like get me on a different level than, you know, people who haven't experienced do. I love, you know, working with our kids directly. You know, at camp, it's mostly summer camp. So, you know, most of the day they're swimming, they're doing arts and crafts, dance, theater, basketball, different like competitions, you know, wearing tutus and running around and singing songs and all the like classic camp stuff. And then once a day they do a clinical activity and that really ranges from, you know, sitting in a circle and just like sharing their truth, who died in their life, how they die, what they're feeling. And it's really peer supported, which is really nice. So there is a clinician in the room, somebody who is, you know, actually a licensed therapist or psychologist in their day to day. But, you know, the kids are really doing a lot of, you know, supporting each other. And, hey, that happened to me. Oh, this is how I deal with that, which is really lovely. And then some of the other activities are more art or expressive based activities. So you're getting, you know, slam poetry or, you know, there's one activity that I always talk about that I love, which is they got these masks, not COVID masks, like hockey goalie masks. I don't know how to describe it, but on the outside, they drew all the things they show to the world. And then on the inside, they drew what they hold to themselves and keep to themselves and don't show anybody. And so then you got to go around if you wanted to kind of share what that meant to you. And I remember so vividly seeing one kid who on the outside drew like a basketball and smiley face and wrote like happy. And then on the inside just drew all black and shared about how like there's that emptiness, that darkness, and that's just not shared with anyone else. Then there was another clinical activity that we did called like coping stations where they learned like four or five different mechanisms. And that was very body focused. So that was like meditation or gentle movement and things like that. So at the end of the day, we want them to go home, one, knowing they're not alone and that like talking about grief is normal, but two, with the coping skills and mechanisms to like make it through the year. Because we don't want to just like take them for the week, put them in this bubble and say like, this is Disneyland. And then you go back into the world and it's shit again, right? Like we want to give them the tools to like, to help themselves a little bit. But that the cool thing is that they come back for an average of 5 years in a row. And then many of them go on to volunteer and like give back to the space that nurtured them in that way, which is really beautiful to see. So, you know, this is not like a 1 week thing that we're like, good luck with the rest of your life. Like, you know, we stay in touch with them throughout the year and invite them to the Minecraft server and send them birthday cards and holiday cards and make sure they know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
So like in like the Minecraft server, for example, like are they just like mostly doing the thing and then sometimes like, you know, talking about grief, or is it like, you know, how do you curate the space?
Yeah, so it's actually really similar to camp where they're doing camp like activities, right? They're like building something and then it just is natural because they know that everyone in the space has experienced it, right? I think in Experience Craft, and I don't run the program, so I don't want to misspeak, but I believe they have something like a Zen garden where they can go and like have more difficult conversations if they need to. But also in the space, they're saying things like, hey, I built this like fishing pole because my dad loved fishing and he died 3 years ago. And someone will say, oh, my dad also loved fishing and he died 5 years ago. So those conversations are just coming up super naturally. And it's not, there could be a, you know, a session where it's not talked about at all. Mm-hmm. But I think like that's the beauty in being in community with people. Sometimes you don't have to talk about it. Sometimes kids just want to be kids, right? Like they've already been othered in their class. Like we hear a lot of our kids talk about how they're bullied for like not having insert family member. So to show up in a space where they're like, oh, okay, I'm just like everybody else. right? There, it doesn't, we don't have to talk about, you know, our pain all the time. And I think it's important to just let them be kids. And that's really the basis of our organization, is that dual process model, that kids can, you know, have that joy and carry that pain, and they're going to have to coexist, and that's just life.
Yeah. That's super dope. I wish I would have had that.
Yeah.
We hear that all the time. We seriously hear that all the time. And the cool thing is 80% of our volunteers have also experienced the death of a parent or sibling. So while you don't have to have experienced grief to like come volunteer with us, many have. So it also is giving these people, and a lot of them experienced this when they were kids, sort of that chance to be part of it again. And so people walk away with lifelong friends, adults and kids.
Yeah.
How many of those 7 days are you like crying?
I think it depends who you are.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's one of those things that grief camp sounds really sad.
Yeah.
Like it really does sound like we're sitting around and crying all day. I would say like the kids who express themselves through crying cry mostly in the clinical activities. And then the other space that, you know, there is some crying is we do a final campfire on the last night of camp. And every kid in the camp gets a chance to stand up in front of the whole camp and say really whatever they want. But it's usually like the name of your person, who they were to you, and like your favorite thing about camp. And so you watch, like, they start with the younger kids usually, who say something like, you know, my name is whatever, my person is this, and I love swimming. And then that's it. And then as you like get older and older, like it becomes a little bit more eloquent. They add a little bit more. Sometimes they go like 3 hours, 2 hours, but people just know. And it's such a special night, because you might have a kid that on day one in the sharing circle did not say a word.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the week, they're watching all of this like grief unfold in front of them. And then on the last night, even if they get up and they say, you know, hi, my name's Jesse and my mom and brother died, and they sit back down, like that is huge. Like even just saying the words is such a huge breakthrough for some kids, and some adults too, right? Like some adults have not had a space like this before to say the words. When I went in 2018, I remember the first time I had to say it, and I was like, I don't think I'm good at this. Please don't judge me. And everyone's like, you're fine. Yeah. You know, like you got this. And so I think that power of being in community, it caused a lot of tears on the final campfire. But, you know, most of the day is like camp stuff. So unless someone falls and like skins their knee, it's not a lot of tears then.
Yeah. How young are the youngest kids?
Going into fourth grade through going into 12th grade.
Got it.
Yeah.
Truly all ages.
Big range.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And then our oldest two groups, so the going into 11th and going into 12th, they're called our LITs, our leaders in training. And so they get some extra responsibilities. So sometimes they'll be paired with like the youngest, one of the youngest kids in camp, and like they become the buddy for the week, or, you know, they learn different skills. You know, we're also training them sort of to like go out into the world, because, you know, they're turning 18, they're maybe going to college, they're maybe going to go work or whatever it is. So to like, you know, give them those extra skills, and, you know, kids will ask for what they want, and we sort of shape the program around that. They usually do an LIT project, usually some sort of like art project or song or something like that. And it's really beautiful. So to watch the kids basically go from little kids to bigger kids and come back to volunteers, like a really, really beautiful journey we've seen. Yeah.
I feel like you're in this unique position, because like very few people, or a lot of people experience grief, very few work in it. And, you know, think about it like in kind of in the way that you do. Do you feel like, are you ever griefed out? Do you ever like feel like you need to run from the grief? If so, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's an incredible question. And my short answer is boundaries. And yes, it's funny. When I interviewed for this job back in 2018, I asked our CEO, who I was having my like final interview with, like, what's the worst part of the job? She said something along the lines of like, how she knew so many ways to die, and that like impacted her and the way she like looked at her, you know, family if someone didn't answer the phone and on time and things like that. And I found that creeping in a bit. Like, I know a lot of ways to die.
Yeah.
right? Like, my girlfriend's like, oh, let's go on a helicopter ride when we go on vacation. I'm like, hell no.
Yeah.
You know, like
people die in helicopters.
Like, it's just 100%. I'm surprised I get on a plane, you know, like I've just heard so many ways to die. And on, in addition, like the anxiety that comes with that is one thing. The anxiety from my own grief is another thing. Like, you know, during that final campfire in 2021, because I went to camp 3 months after my mom died, I was really toying with it and I didn't know what to do. And I ended up going because I thought it would be more good than harmful. And I was sitting at one of those campfires and I left and I just went to the room and I just bawled my eyes out. And I bawled my eyes out for like 10 minutes and then I went back, you know, and sometimes you just have to like get it out of your system. Sometimes you have to take a walk. Sometimes you just have to be like, I'm going to take a mental health day and really learn how to separate yourself. I think it's so important when you're working in these kinds of spaces to be able to make that space for yourself. Therapy is great. Self-care is great. Boundaries is great. To really have those moments where you're able to take a step back, because these professions, people get burnt out way too easily. Yeah. Because how emotional it is, like, of course I get it, you know? So to like, make sure that, you know, I'm so hyper aware of it now that if I even start to feel myself be like, you know, drop into that space, I'm like, close computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to do it for the longevity. You know what I mean? I feel that this job is like my life and I want to give as much as myself for as long as I can. And if I don't take care of myself, that timeline is shortened.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Do they give you unlimited mental health days?
Not at the moment. Maybe one day. But they're very understanding and flexible, and yeah, you know, it's a grief organization, so it's not like, you know, I'm working at like a financial institution or something that's like, what do you mean you get one day for bereavement?
Right.
Yeah.
How
big are the camps? Like, how many kids are we talking?
Yeah, so it really ranges because we open them. We're building and building and
right,
taking
ever
over
expanding
the world, basically. So always expanding. And so our first program that we ever started in 2009 is still going, and they have about 250 kids. So it really ranges from the small, like that Maryland program I was talking about, I believe we'll have about 80 kids this summer. We have a cap. I believe it's around 250 because we don't want it to get bigger than that, because I think, you know, to maintain that sacred space, like you can't make it bigger than that. Like these have to remain small spaces. So I think we would hit a certain point with these camps and then just continue to open more.
Got it.
Yeah.
Is it all, are they like donating the time at their camp, or is all like, you know, funded by donors or whatever?
Yeah. So it's all funded by donors. So what we basically do for most of our programs is we take an already existing summer camp and we rent 1 week after their normal season is over. Mm. So they have kids for 7 weeks, and on the 8th week, Experience Camps comes in and we rent it from them. And yeah, they charge us, and every single kid pays $0. So a kid will never have to, you know, pay any money no matter what. But yeah, we work hard to fundraise. It's
What were you doing at South By? Just hanging out.
I was actually on a panel. I was on a panel alongside some other amazing humans. Hospice nurse Julie, who people may know from TikTok, hospice nurse. Rayhan Chowdhury, who's the CEO of Chapter, which is a memorialization app for people to come together in community after a person has died. And Bing Chen was our moderator. He is just a badass human being, operates a company called Gold House, which people should definitely look up. They're doing awesome stuff. And we were talking about death and grief and the ways Gen Z approaches it, whether it's through TikTok or talking about it or not talking about it, the different ways that Experience Camps is showing up for Gen Z and the programs that we're putting in place. And, you know, it was really interesting, like, to have a conversation about death, dying, and grief at, you know, a tech conference. But I think it was really special. And the room was sold out, which was amazing. They were doing one in, one out. My mind was blown because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how many people would want to show up and talk about this. But I guess a lot of people did. And we had a lot of people sharing their stories during the Q&A and asking for advice. And it was really beautiful. And I was fortunate enough to kind of hang with the grief crew, which is how I met Isabel. And it's just nice being in community. That's like my biggest thing. I just love being around people, good people who are down to talk about hard stuff.
Okay. So the only other question I can think of is, do you have any particular story that you want to share from camp?
There was a camper at one of our programs who had shared with his bunk that he had not slept through the night since his dad died like a year prior. And so that night the kids brought all of their beds around his bed. They were like single beds. They pushed them all up against his bed and said, maybe this will help, just knowing that we're like here for you. And the kid woke up in the morning and said that he had slept through the night. And he shared that at the final campfire. And I think like everyone was in tears and really like the epitome of the power of community and grief camp and being with people who, you know, support you even in silly ways. Like that sounds silly, right? But it was really meaningful and helped him so much. And I think, you know, there's a million moments like that, but that one really like sticks out in my mind as so supportive and authentic.
Okay. Thank you, first of all.
Yeah, I'm appreciative of you both and allowing me to have the space to talk about myself.
Yeah.
and also experience camps. I think, you know, my personal grief journey has really allowed me to, you know, show up in really unique ways for this organization and just like the world in general. And so, you know, out of the darkness came a little light, and I always try and remember that and feel grateful for it. So I appreciate you both having me to talk about the things I care so much about.
Yeah.
No, it's been sick. It's been really good to have you. What is something, I don't know, non grievy or deathy that you're excited to do in the next like little bit? If such a thing exists.
Do you want to know what just came to my mind?
Sure.
You can cut this out and I'll say a real answer but I have a uterine fibroid that I'm getting removed next week. And I am so excited because it has caused me so much pain for the last couple of years. And it has been a journey to decide whether I was going to get it out or not. And I'm ripping that sucker out. And I'm terrified of like needles and all that stuff. So I'm just like sort of dissociating a little bit until it happens. Yeah. But I'm so excited to like be pain free.
Oh my God. I'm so happy.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the answer you wanted, but I'm getting surgery next week. Yeah,
I'm not gunning for any specific answer. I appreciate the authenticity.
Oh my God. I don't know if that was the right answer to give.
Dude, I mean, chronic pain sucks. Yeah. Like that.
It's awful.
That's wild that you had that for years.
Yeah. So I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
You just thought it was like cramps or something?
About like the medical issues that have in this country, but I had no idea. I just thought I had bad cramps.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh my God.
God, how many issues are just like that where you're like,
it makes me so angry.
I'm like, I think I just have fucked up knees, but what if I have like, you know, a torn meniscus or something, right? Like,
dude, yeah, I had a friend in college who just like woke up every morning and basically like felt as if he had not slept at all. Right. And then the whole semester he was like, you know, going through this, and then he went finally to a sleep center and they put him in an MRI machine while he was sleeping, and it turns out he was having sleep seizures. As soon as he went to sleep, his brain would totally light up, and they put him on anticonvulsants, but he was in sleep paralysis, so you couldn't tell at all, right? So they put him on anticonvulsants and it totally fixed the problem.
That's wild. Wow. So like his brain was doing the things that your brain would do while you're having a seizure, but his body wasn't doing it.
Correct.
That's wild.
Damn.
Right?
Dude, the medical system. And I bet you they charge an arm and a leg for whatever he has to do after that. When I tell you when they finally did the ultrasound, I was like, that costs what? Mm-hmm. It's atrocious.
Really? Yeah. And just like reproductive health generally, like, you know, we have a friend who's like getting eggs frozen, and like they don't cover that because for some Catholic reason or something, like it's something about the, it was like, a, I think a religious, like
my insurance doesn't cover it.
Yeah. Intervention.
It's
thing.
So much money. It's yeah. horrifying.
No. Yeah.
But there are a lot of grants out there for that kind of stuff.
Oh, really?
If this is still part of our, yeah. our episode. Yeah. yeah, yeah. Google.
Google the grants.
Google the grants. Google it. Yeah, just write your medical condition, grants.
Yeah.
And see what
Honestly,
happens.
Really.
That is good advice.
True. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is your time. Do you want to plug anything?
At experience camps across the board. Okay. My personal social is just me talking about my own grief, which is probably less interesting than experience camp. So yeah, we're experience camps across the board. And if you're looking for ways to get involved, definitely check out our website, experiencecamps.org. If you've got some money to spend, we'd love your donations, experiencecamps.org/donate. And then yeah, our Minecraft program, our camp program, all the info about that is on our website. And we'd love to have cool. you.
And as always, you can find us at I'm the Villain Pod. That's our Instagram and our Twitter. Otherwise, bye.